AFA Action is the governmental affairs affiliate of American Family Association. As part of our mission to inform and mobilize voters and government officials, AFA Action has three divisions designed to address specific facets of our country's needs. These three divisions are the Center for Government Renewal, iVoter Guide, and the Center for Judicial Renewal.
At the Center for Government Renewal, our goal is to advance biblical and constitutional principles. We are building a movement to defend the rights of families and people of faith. We are passing innovative legislation in the states, pushing back against Washington, D.C., and equipping leaders for the fight. With your help, we can build a brighter future for our children and our country.
iVoter Guide is known for its accuracy and integrity in researching and evaluating candidates on your ballot so that faith-based voters like you can be good stewards of your citizenship and vote for candidates that share your values. Thousands of candidates, from president and Congress to state legislatures and even your local school board, are evaluated based on their positions on issues like the right to life, religious liberty, national defense, the economy, and border security. iVoter Guide helps you vote wisely.
At the Center for Judicial Renewal, we keep tabs on federal judges so that we're fully prepared to hand solid recommendations to the president in the event that a Supreme Court seat opens up. We research and rank prospective judges according to these 10 principles of a constitutional judge. Essentially, we look for judges with the best long-term demonstrable record of commitment to the constitutional role of judges, which is to decide cases according to the original meaning of the Constitution and legislative texts, and to never legislate from the bench.
Each of these departments play a crucial role in fulfilling AFA Action's vision to see our country successfully preserving life, liberty, and the ability to pursue happiness. To learn more and to get involved, go to afaaction.net.
I vote for family.
I vote for legal immigration.
I vote for religious freedom.
I vote for law and order.
I vote for our children's future.
I vote for peace through strength.
I vote for life.
I vote using iVoterGuide.com.
Which direction will America take on November 5th, 2024? That's the discussion we're going to have today on this episode of AFA at Home. Which direction will America take in November of this year? That's what we're going to talk about today. Great panel, some of them returning guests here on AFA at Home. Dr. Jameson Taylor is with us. He's Director of Policy and Legislative Affairs over at AFA Action. Sandy Rios was longtime host of Sandy Rios in the Morning and now host of Sandy Rios 24/7 on AFR. Rick Green, co-host of Me on the Core, founder of Patriot Academy. Debbie Wolfnow, president of iVoter Guide, and lastly, Philip Draghi, director of Center for Judicial Renewal, and I'm Walker Wildman. I'll be your host and your MC on today's episode. Well, jumping right into it, not to waste anybody's time, Philip, you've got the first question, and this is a broad question, but specifically regarding the irregularities, the fraud, the just the shadiness that was the 2020 election. If you could summarize what went wrong,
right?
How would you do that?
So we have 3 hours for this, right?
Walker, is that, just for you, three
just
hours
for me.
You.
So there's an official answer and an unofficial answer. The official one, which is true, because I did work a bit on this. One of the big problems we had was COVID, absentee ballots. The federal constitution says that presidential electors are determined in a manner decided by the state legislatures. In many cases in states, we had a policy like in Wisconsin, I believe it was, where there was a state law passed by the state legislature that said that absentee ballots had to be cast at an office manned with people. Yet, you had tons of ballot drop boxes all over the state with absentee ballots being mailed out indiscriminately and returned that didn't comply with the law. So these were literally illegal votes. Now you say, well, some of them may have been actual voters, so they weren't fraudulent perhaps in that sense, but still they were illegal votes. That was a big problem. I think that was the heart of it. There were a lot of other things that happened. But for me, that was the heart of it. But the unofficial answer for me is a spiritual one, because that's why we're here today, right? To talk about this is a Christian ministry. And one of my favorite verses in the New Testament is, submit therefore to God, resist the devil, and he'll flee from you. And it's such a simple principle. But I like to think of it like God is here and he has an umbrella. And if we're submitted to him, we're under him, like one nation under God. Mm-hmm. The problem, the challenge we faced in 2020 and the one that we face now is whether we'll be submitted to God, whether as a nation and a people we'll be consecrated to him. And that word consecration, I've looked at it some recently. There are different definitions, but there are two that are really interesting. One is Nazar, where we get the word Nazarite. And you think of a Nazarite vow, or vowing to not do certain things, to not cut your hair, or consecrating away from. But the other is the word kadosh, which means to consecrate to something, to draw near to the Lord. And so literally, as you think about that verse, submit therefore to God, you can think about consecrating, kadoshing to God, and resisting the devil, or nazaring away from the devil, consecrating away from the things of the enemy. And so I think that's our real challenge. If we want to be under God's blessing in this nation, which we do, especially with the election, then we have to be under him. You know, it's like the simple concept of an umbrella. If you want to be protected from the rain, get under the umbrella, be consecrated to the Lord. The challenge we've had again is that America has not wanted to be under God. Now we do, right?
Sure.
But as a nation, that's our challenge, I think, in this election.
Yeah, I mean, I know there were many people. I interacted with one gentleman who was a born-again believer, and he was so disheartened by the 2020 election and all the injustice that went down from a voting irregularity standpoint that he was just, he basically said, I'm not really interested in this anymore. You know, I'm still going to do what I can where I can, but this whole, you know, Washington, D.C. politics stuff, I mean, I'm just fed up with it. Now, you know, is that right? Is that wrong? I don't think we need to disengage, right? That's why we're here. We need to engage. But I could understand why he felt that way. He was just frustrated, right?
Yeah.
And that's what happens sometimes with injustice is we kind of throw up our hands because we feel like it's out of our control. But Jameson, after 2020 and 2021 today, There's been attempts to right the wrongs of the past and try to make our elections at least more sound, more right. Has there been any progress, in your opinion, on making sure that our elections are run with integrity?
There's been some. You know, if we look at the 2020 election, we had seven swing states, basically, seven states that were really, really close. And you needed to win that if you wanted to become president. Those are the states, for the most part, that passed either voting reform laws to make it easy to vote and hard to cheat, or in some cases, if we look at Michigan and Minnesota, which were states that were very close, you know, Trump needs to win Michigan. He almost won Minnesota in 2016. When Democrats got power in those states, Michigan and Minnesota, Nevada, what they did was make it easier to vote and even easier to cheat. And so we have to look at those states and think about, okay, they have gone in the wrong direction. And then we have other states like Arizona, like Georgia, that have gone in the right direction. They have made it easy to vote and hard to cheat. So, I mean, if we're looking at some of the polls, for instance, it's looking like Trump is ahead in Arizona and Georgia. It's going to be very hard for Trump, for instance, to win in Michigan, because once Democrats got power, again, what they did was change the voting laws. They never intend to give power back. They're not interested in a fair election. They are interested in power and whatever they can do to maintain that power. And so that's where my concerns come with states like this. Also, Pennsylvania is another state to watch, because mail-in ballots, there are going to be more than 1 million mail-in ballots in Pennsylvania.
Wow.
And there are several things that the courts are doing, because this is one thing to look at. For instance, in Wisconsin, the legislature passed really good laws to reform voting, but the governor vetoed that. In Arizona, they have passed some really good laws to make it hard to cheat, but the courts have blunted that. So if we look in Arizona, for instance, the courts, Arizona wants to do things like make sure you're a citizen of the United States before you vote, which is perfectly reasonable. You know, they want to make sure that you can prove your residency, perfectly reasonable. The courts are blunting that. If we look at Pennsylvania, there are two very important cases that are moving along. The state Supreme Court is looking at a case to determine whether or not the dates on mail-in ballots need to be accurate. Now, think about that. I mean, let's say that Trump wins Pennsylvania, and I don't think we're going to know the results on election night.
Don't tell me that, James.
Let's get ready.
So we're going to have election month, right?
Because I think that what the left, you know, what they're going to do is think about, well, how many votes do we need to win Pennsylvania?
Right.
How are we going to find those with mail-in ballots that have the wrong dates? So these are the types of things for folks to watch. I think also what the left wants to do is, if there's not a clear winner on election night, that they're going to just kind of have this low boil thing going on where they're spreading rumors about election integrity and whatever. And I think they want to provoke the right. They want to provoke conservatives so then they can come down with the reaction to make us look bad. Mm. So the most important thing, I think, is to cover the swing states, the seven important states, cover them in prayer, as Philip was talking about.
Yeah.
We need to pray for fair elections. We need to pray that God's hand is over these elections.
Mm. Sandy, the it seems like it was, you know, 4 months ago, 5 months ago, when Kamala Harris was installed as the Democrat nominee. But it wasn't that long ago. It was just a month or two ago. And Biden went from one day, he said, I'm not going anywhere. And he even went as far to say that I'm the only one that can beat Donald Trump, to the next day, he's resigning. And Nancy Pelosi is saying he needs to go on Mount Rushmore with George Washington and others. So the drastic change in approach was something to behold. But nonetheless, the Democrats installed Kamala Harris in a matter of really, I've seen some commentators say it was really in a matter of 30 minutes because.
Installed, right?
Biden stepped down via X post or Twitter, formerly Twitter, and Kamala Harris said, I'm running, all within a 1 hour period. And then the next hour, the Democrat superdelegates all said before the convention, we're all for Kamala Harris. So my question is, do you think that they'll get away with this? I mean, this installing of Kamala Harris without the Democrat voters having a say, to me, seems very undemocratic.
Well, of course it is. But I think the problem is that people are not tuned in. Certainly Democrats have gotten used to a level of lawlessness, and we've gotten used to their lawlessness. Mm. And I also think it's worth repeating that they told us repeatedly how competent Joe Biden was, over and over. Kamala,
yes.
Oh, he's great. He's sharp. Yeah, he's sharp as that. Whatever. He's wonderful. The media cooperated, all the Democrats. Nancy Pelosi, oh, yes, Joe's great. They were lying to the American people.
Yeah.
So the Democrats, who are not terribly engaged, heard some of that stuff, believed them, and voted for him to be the candidate. If I were a Democrat who had done that, I would be furious, and actually I think some of them are.
They are.
Yeah.
So then suddenly, this is lawlessness. This is not our system. You don't have a primary and have millions of people go to the polls, deceive them about a candidate. You could even switch the, you could do all that in so many different ways. That's appalling.
Yeah.
And then suddenly, oh no, we're not going to, even though you voted for him, millions of you, suddenly, overnight, Joe Biden is an old man who can't be trusted. He has to be removed. And we have this young, fresh, not so fresh, but that's a whole other story. They're going to install this person that came in last, had a dropout when she ran for president before, because she's so disliked. She has a horrible record. She cannot communicate. And they know all of this about her. She is left of the left, and they didn't care what the Democratic voters wanted. They put her in, and they all went along with it, some of them. Lots of people are leaving, though, the Democratic Party because of that. So will they get away with it? Yes, I think they will.
Yeah, it's astonishing because the Democrats claim they're all about saving democracy.
Yeah.
Debbie, the question is, the Harris campaign, as we get close to November, is trying to basically remake Kamala Harris, you know, in the likeness of a moderate Democrat who wants a good economy and safe streets and a secure border. But Kamala Harris was once quoted as being the most liberal Democrat in the U.S. Senate, out of the 50-plus Democrats that were in the Senate at the time. Where does iVoterGuide have, or where do they have Kamala Harris when it comes to the facts and the research and the data?
Well, you know, she's trying to change her spots, but a leopard doesn't really change her spots. She says, my values haven't changed, but my policies are changing. So iVoterGuide, last time we rated her, was a verified liberal. And it was after that time when we realized, you know, the left has gone so far left, we added another rating.
It's called the Harris rating.
That broke the gauge. So, you know, we have this gas gauge that goes from verified liberal to verified conservative. The liberal's the empty gas. If you're run on fumes, you're a verified liberal. If your tank is full, you're conservative. But we've added a rating called far left. And okay. She's almost the poster child for the far left rating. Hmm. It's wow. Open borders. The borders are that let in 20 million people. It's mm-hmm. cradle-to-grave socialism. She wants Medicare for all. She wants us to pay for everything. It's infanticide. She wants abortion up through birth. Yeah. She checks all the boxes, and she's not liberal. She's more than liberal. She's a far left.
Yeah, that's the – I'm going to be interested in – and once again, we've got a few weeks before the election, and we're – folks, we're going to get towards like, hey, what are you voting on election day? We're going to get there. We've still got 30, 40 minutes left, but – We've got to kind of do a flashback, right? We got to bring everybody up to speed because there's so much propaganda and rewriting of history that if we don't like remember, hey, Kamala Harris was a U.S. senator from California, the most liberal state in the country, then people just all of a sudden forget. They just think, you know, she's VP and she's Biden's number two, which can't be forgotten. She's Biden's number two. And how have the last 4 years gone? Pretty bad from a policy standpoint.
But she's going to make everything new.
She is going to make everything new. Yeah, in her image and likeness. Rick, let me ask you this. I joked about how the Democrats want to save democracy, and they talk about – they use this word democracy all the time. So kind of two questions. Is America a pure democracy? First question.
I hope not.
But yeah. I'm going to do like they do Biden. They ask him three questions, and he only remembers one. So
great.
Listen up, Rick.
The test is on. Sandy, help me out if I ever get the second and third.
Is America a pure democracy? But secondly, are the Democrats really interested in democracy in general?
No, I think Jameson had it right. They're interested in power, for sure. Obviously, we're not a democracy. We're a republic, a constitutional republic at that. We're guaranteed to be that. The Constitution guarantees that every state will be that. And they've been trying to sell this democracy line and tell you you're a threat to democracy, which everybody's answer to, are you a threat to democracy, should be, yes, absolutely I'm a threat to democracy. The founders called it mobocracy, one of the greatest of evils, and that it always ends in violence. So it's all designed to undermine the entire system. That's why they do that. And I, all these years, first time I've been in your living room, Walker, so if I violate the rules, I apologize. But I got to go back to what Sandy said real quick, because will they get away with it? As you said, absolutely yes. But as you alluded to, there are consequences for it. And the people that are leaving, it's huge. The fact that they, as you said, installed this leftist as their nominee, they are now losing some of their biggest names. I mean, when a Kennedy of Democrat royalty has now moved to our side, when the Joe Rogans and the Elon Musks and the, you know, all of these kinds of people are now saying we're going to support Trump, the consequence of what they've done, and if you listen to the interviews of these people, they said that was the linchpin, was that they installed this candidate that will not do interviews, that will not, you know, can't even articulate what they're actually for. So I think the consequences for the Democrat Party are going to be massive long term. Now we'll see if the media, how much they're able to cover this up and package this to get them past November. We'll see what happens with that. But long term, this is a cataclysmic change in the political structure of America. So I did forget the second and third question. Sandy, what did he ask me?
Are they really interested in saving democracy?
Oh, yeah, of course not. No, it's for them, it's, and the thing about raw power and the fact that they're so hungry for it, that's why the justice system is being destroyed. That's why it's a, you know, it's a two-tier justice system now. It's not about blind justice, equal justice anymore. It's about I'm going to persecute my enemies. It's all about holding on to power. The danger is that if they succeed in doing that, when you end up with that much raw power, you are able to silence the opposition. And so I would say that, you know, on the good side, people are waking up. And again, back to the point on elections, wherever you are, whatever state you're in, whether or not the legislature helped to move the ball in the right direction on election integrity, your duty does not change. So to your person that you were talking about, no one should say, I'm checking out because I'm afraid they're going to steal my vote. We do our duty regardless. We do everything we can to make the system better. But the legislatures absolutely should be doing these things, but never let that give us an excuse to stay home. Last thing I'll say on that is I think we're in the exact same position. We're basically a divided nation, and we have one side, and this is an example that happened in history. I'll see if you can guess what it is. One side has the power, and they're trying to silence the other side, so much so that they tried to assassinate the leader of the opposition. They are pursuing and trying to shut down the opposition completely. The other side's a ragtag bunch that starts to get a few victories here and there and starts to swell in their numbers. And there's a particular group from this side that switches, kind of like what we're talking about now, because they're so disgusted by what's been going on. And this group has 200 leaders known as the Sons of Issachar. And they come over because they understand the times and they know what to do. And they help to give the right side the momentum that they need. I think that's where we are right now. I think you've got a Saul-type obsession with power. Do anything we can to prevent David from taking power and the other side taking over. That's the kind of situation we're in right now, and there's a massive shift of men of Issachar and women of Issachar that are saying, I can't abide this anymore. It's time for me to stand for the principles of freedom of speech and freedom of religion and basic due process. To see due process being lost is causing a lot of Democrats to switch over. So I think there's a lot to be hopeful for right now, but it's an inflection point, and it's precarious times for sure.
It is, and before we move on to another question, I want to kind of make a comment that the consequences here are, I think, broader. We're talking about November 5th. The consequences of this election are broader than even sometimes I grasp, because if Kamala Harris is successfully sworn in as the next president, the Democrats' installment strategy of her will have been successful. I mean, who could argue against it?
And rewarded.
And rewarded, right, by the voters. That's very concerning long term. Because that really brings into question our entire election apparatus. Do we need primaries, and do we really need elections, or can the party brokers just install whoever they want? So I really think her being legitimized at the ballot box has longer consequences and broader consequences than just a four-year presidency or an eight-year presidency. So,
Walker, could I just add something?
Yeah, absolutely.
There's a movement around the world where dictators come in. It used to be done by violence. Now it's done through the democratic process. It's happened in Venezuela. It's happened in a number of South American countries and others I could mention. But they come, then they change the Constitution, then they disband the elected members, and then they don't want elections. They don't want democracy. They want power. But this is how they do it. They work through the process. And I think that's exactly what we're seeing here.
It's what Jameson touched on, too, with Michigan, for example. Once they get in power, those things that were illegal that allowed them to, quote, win the election were illegal, but they weren't stopped. So now they take the very things that were illegal and make them legal.
Yeah.
Sandy, that's what Jameson said, and it's what happens in Venezuela. And it is happening by degrees in states here, so it's concerning.
That was the warning, actually, after 2020. The fact that these states, governors or state supreme courts, changed election law unconstitutionally, as you talked about earlier, and got away with it. And even Thomas had said this in his dissenting opinion. He said, if we let them do this, we're encouraging more of this in the future. And so same thing here, if you let them install, if you let them do these things, if you let them have a two-tier justice system, they abuse the J6 defendants. I mean, all the things that they're doing, the more they get away with it, the more they're going to want to do it, which was why there has to be consequences.
But, Rick, when we say that, for the audience, do not be discouraged. Do what Rick said, which is vote. Don't worry that people are trying to cheat. Do your duty and show up and vote.
That's right.
And I think to underscore that, when I think of voting, I think of the parable of talents.
Amen.
Where you have this king who gives his servants, you know, with inflation of probably the equivalent of like $5 billion. You know, if someone sends you $5 in a birthday card, like, yeah, you can go blow it, you know, whatever. If someone entrusts you with $5 billion, you can know, yeah, I better do something with this. God has entrusted us with the constitutional republic.
That's right.
He has entrusted us with this ability to govern ourselves But many Christians and many churches, they're not on the field. And we talk about things that Democrats have done in different states. They've often done it, which is a one-person majority.
Yeah.
I mean, it's party discipline, but it's also Christians and conservatives are not showing up to the fight.
That's right.
So, yeah, it's so important to vote. I think we have to think about voting as a civic responsibility, but also a trust that God has given us. And if we don't use it, and if we don't get more involved, then we are going to lose that. It's use it or lose it. And I think that we are at an inflection point.
Can I put an exclamation point on that? Because I'm going to say it not as nice as you did. If you're not using that talent, you are the wicked and slothful servant.
Mm.
Now, I say that as somebody that lost by 20 votes on election night out of 30,000, right? So every vote counts. Now, we had a recount because we had ballots we could actually put our hands on and ended up winning. But my point is, it really is a duty. This isn't just a right. This isn't just a privilege to have. This is a duty. And we need to start thinking of it like that. And by not doing it, we're the wicked and slothful servant.
Well,
let's be the good and faithful servant.
It's not just a president. As you talked about, the state legislature made a huge difference.
Yeah.
It's every race down
That's
the ballot.
Right.
You can't bury all of them. That's how you multiply.
Even more important at the local level.
Exactly.
Because voter guide makes it easy, right?
Yeah.
You go get registered there, find out what's happening. Makes it very easy. You'll have an excuse now.
Yes.
That's right.
iVoterGuide.com. Yeah, iVoterGuide.com. And Debbie, your team's doing thousands of hours of research throughout this election cycle. And not just, hey, this person's conservative, this person's liberal. We do provide that. But you guys provide campaign contributions, voting records, policy positions, speaking, what they've said publicly, whether it be media interviews, et cetera. But just talk about the depth of iVoterGuide for our audience.
Well, it's beyond anything you've ever seen before, because we're looking at who they've given money to, because what somebody does with their pocketbook, who they support personally, as well as who supports their campaign, tells you where their values lie. I mean, what's important to them. So we look at that. We look at if they've ever held office. They've had scorecards from state legislature. They've had, if they've been in Congress, even if they've been in a school board or in a city council, how have they voted? What have they done with the power that we've entrusted them with? Because actions speak louder than words. So that's what iVoter Guide researches.
It's better than any voter guide out there, because it's not just how they voted or what they say in their ads.
It's not a scorecard.
I'm going to do this, right? Yeah. This is what they've actually done with their money, wherever your treasure is, your heart is, with, you know, who do they hang out with, who are they? Anyway, it's critical that we use this tool.
Absolutely. iVoterGuide.com. All right, folks, we got one more segment left, and we're going to get deeper and more specific as we head into the November 5th election. But folks, this is very important, and we wanted to spend this first segment kind of bringing you up to speed on where we are today, and then we're going to talk specifics about the November election as we come back in the next segment. Stay tuned.
Presenting AFA Stream, an online platform that hosts all AFA-produced video content, including documentaries, church curriculum, American Family Radio shows, and our Cultural Institute series.
I would submit that we are a Christian nation, and the proof of that is in our founding documents and in the U.S. Constitution itself, because our founders recognized for the first time in world history that our rights come from God, our Creator, not our government.
AFA Stream is a vital step that we are taking to fulfill our vision to be a leading organization in biblical worldview training for cultural transformation. You'll find top-notch resources that address the issues of our day related to marriage, family, the sanctity of life, and many others. Start streaming today. Stream.afa.net.
Did you know that only 20% of registered voters actually participate in primary elections? Could it be that many people don't vote in primaries because they lack the necessary information needed to make wise voting decisions? iVoter Guide can help you pick the candidates most aligned with your values. With so much on the line for generations to come, it's crucial we make our voices heard in every election. Use iVoterGuide.com. Vote wisely.
Welcome back to this episode of AFA at Home. Which direction will America take in November of this year as Election Day approaches? We're spending the last 30 minutes or so kind of bringing you up to speed on how we got here in this 2024 election cycle and all the shenanigans that have been pulled by political parties. And so here we are just a few weeks out from the election, and let's continue this discussion and talk about what's really at stake today. on the ballot. But before we do that, Jameson, I had this question held over from the first segment, but looking at when we were looking at possibly Biden stepping down, somebody else stepping in, there were all kind of names floated, Michelle Obama, Gavin Newsom, Gretchen Whitmer, the list goes on. I thought if Kamala Harris is their pick for the Democrat nomination, I thought this is going to be a walk in the park for Donald Trump because of how poorly she performed in the 2020 primary within her own party. She was polling 1, 2, 3% in the Democrat primary. She dropped out, I think, at South Carolina, but she didn't even make it to her home state of California in the primary. Nonetheless, was she underestimated? Because this has actually become a competition now.
I think she has been underestimated, or to be more precise, I think that we are underestimating the forces that are aligned against our constitutional republic. Yeah, the Democrat machine, the globalist machine, the corporate machine that is coming together to make sure that they continue to get what they want. And when we're talking about globalism, in particular, what we're talking about are Marxists. So you look at Kamala Harris, look at her record as vice president. It's abysmal. 2023, you have Democrat donors that are even saying, why is she, you know, they're worried about her bringing down the ticket because she's clearly incompetent. I mean, she's the border czar, right? Well, how good a job did she do? We all know. Horrible. Yeah. I mean, we have the Midwest, Ohio, being taken over some towns by illegal aliens. Mm-hmm. I mean, so she did a horrible job as border czar. But not only is she incompetent, she is radical. She's very, very radical. She's from the California wing of the Democrat Party. Mm-hmm. She's from the San Francisco wing.
That's right.
For the Democrat Party.
Home of Nancy Pelosi.
I mean, she's essentially, she's a social democrat, which is the same party that Vladimir Lenin was part of, the man who killed millions of people in Russia, okay? So we are dealing with someone who's very, very radical. But at the same time, there are powerful forces behind her that are very smart, and they understand what messaging to use. They understand what levers to pull. Now, when we look at her policies, this is what people really need to think about. Okay, what does she support? We heard Debbie talk about, you know, open borders. The other thing that she supports is zero emissions. So what does that mean? That means it's the communist term, it's degrowth. So the communists are not talking anymore about kind of deconstructing capitalism, having total government control over the economy. The word they like to use is degrowth, meaning they're going to control everything you do.
I hear the word, you know, poverty.
Yes, poverty. Exactly.
Eating bugs.
Poverty. It's eating bugs. And this is real. If you live, you know, Mississippi or Florida or somewhere where it's really hot, they're talking about controlling your air condition. If you live somewhere really cold, they're talking about controlling your heat, controlling the food supply. Mm. Degrowth means total government control over your life and over your economy. And I think the other thing that we need to look at is what she has done to attack basic civil liberties. As the Attorney General in California, she went after political groups that she did not agree with. She targeted the people that supported these groups. This case went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. And luckily, the conservatives won. Mm. You know, they said, yeah, as AG, you don't have a right to use your political office to target.
Weren't they going after
enemies.
Donor databases?
Yeah,
of
going after
nonprofits like ours.
Going after donors. Yeah, I mean, I guarantee if she's elected president that she's going to come after groups like AFA in every possible way. So we need to realize that we're dealing with someone incompetent, radical, but also dangerous.
Mm, absolutely. Rick, we're going to talk in a few minutes about, you know, House, Senate, mayor, city council. I mean, all these positions are important up and down the ballot. But the presidency, right? What are the top powers that a president exercises that makes a difference in the direction of our country?
Well, that's one reason a lot of Christians that say, well, I just can't vote for the mean tweet guy. They need to understand they're actually voting for about 9,000 appointments in Washington, D.C., and all of this whole team that's going to come into Washington, D.C., not one person or one personality. And so it's critical to recognize that. We've always, you know, talked about judges as the number one issue. 2016, that was actually You know, I wasn't thrilled about Donald Trump becoming the nominee. I was a Ted Cruz guy back then. I was, you know, mad that Donald Trump was so dismissive of Ted Cruz. And so it was judges that made me say, okay, listen, I know Hillary's going to appoint absolute 100% Marxist judges up and down the line. Trump will at least maybe get 50% of them right. And so that was my number one issue in 2016. It's my number one issue now. And he proved that he actually got, I don't know, you know better than me, but I say about 95% right on his judges. He's got a lot of good folks. Well. And so that's a huge, huge issue for us, of course, judges. But also, second biggest issue to me is the DOJ and the FBI and the whole apparatus of the three-letter agencies being weaponized against our people, pro-life activists being raided at 5 o'clock in the morning, you know, and guns pointed at kids. I mean, all this crazy stuff that they're doing with federal agencies, many of which are completely unconstitutional in the first place, but also just being used in an evil, evil way. All of those things matter when you elect the president. It can change so much because all of those agencies come under the Article II powers of the presidency. So we have to think about it like that. It cannot be which personality do I like better. Yeah. It can't even be who did better in the debate or anything like that. It's got to be what's the team that they're bringing in and the policies that are going to happen as a result of that long after their term is over.
Well, and I would argue that this a potential second Trump term has the potential to be even more transformative than the first.
Huge.
Because anyone who studies how the first term went, he was heavily understaffed, heavily undermined by the bureaucratic agencies.
And wrong-staffed, right?
Like he had a lot of people. Wrong-staffed, too. Bad people. But he was slow-walked at every turn. I mean, whether it's the DOJ or Department of Homeland Security.
Senate confirmations.
Confirmations. I mean, he was just like, I mean, backstabbed at every turn because there wasn't the right people in positions.
Well, look at his tone, too, now, how different it is. Remember when he came in January 2017, instead of lock her up, he said, I'm not going to do that. And he made the decision not to do that because
he
actually—
They're very nice people, he said.
Yeah, he actually thought, campaigns are nasty, but we all love America. So when the campaign's over, we're all going to pull together for America.
Yeah.
Now, you look at the interview he did with Tucker last summer, and he said, these people hate America. He's finally figured it out. They hate America, they hate you, and they want the power and the control. And he knows that now because he's had the boot of government on his neck. I mean, when you have had the boot of government on your neck, when you've been abused like that through the court system, all of those things, when they tried to kill you, at some point you say, okay, you know what? We're at war for the heart and soul of America. I'm going to do the things that are necessary to save the country. So I think there's a man that for such a time as this, the resolve that he would have should he get another term may be just what we need to clean house and actually truly drain the swamp.
Yeah, and I've gotta mention this, but I don't want to get too sidetracked. But a second Trump term and a second transition team is going to have to rely on trusted conservative groups,
right,
to staff the bureaucracy.
Right.
You can't go in this, you know, winging it. Right. Right. You're talking 8,000, 9,000 positions. So you know this bait where the media really baited Trump into criticizing the Heritage Foundation and their project, which we're a part of.
Right.
It was bait, and he unfortunately took the bait. Their project is a good project.
Yeah.
And
it's
a project to right the wrongs of 2020. I'm sorry, of the last administration, 2017 to 2021, where they didn't plan for replacing the bureaucracy with Trump loyalists or America First loyalists. So I just think there's a lot that we can do better than the last time get the personnel right.
I think
right.
He understands what the swamp is. He just talked about getting draining the swamp. He didn't know how big
it was.
That's
exactly right.
And now he does. And it's going to take those appointments that you talked about to make a difference.
And just for the viewers, the swamp is literally the bureaucracy, right? We call it the fourth branch. It's not nefarious smoke-filled room. These are actual appointed federal employees that thousands and thousands and thousands of them. The swamp is real, but it's actually bureaucrats. It's all these agencies that have been empowered to act, and Congress doesn't hold them accountable, so they have their own judicials. All these horrible things that have happened.
Yeah.
But we're doing better on dialing it back, some good Supreme Court decisions. But to your point, he gets that now, where I don't think he had a clue going in.
Yeah. Everybody thought it was rhinos. It's other people elected. It is so much more.
Yeah, and the way you have a lasting legacy beyond 4 years is you staff up the bureaucracies, right?
Yeah.
I mean, how many years did Trump in the first term spend firing Obama people?
Right,
and the
right.
Obama people are still there. So
it was
got to start with fire. Yeah.
And the courts,
fired, right?
And the courts. Yeah. But speaking of the courts and who approves the judges or confirms the judges, Philip, Obviously, the House and the Senate are important. We're going to talk about local elections in a minute, but the House and the Senate are important. The House, of course, spending legislation originates in the House. Presidential appointments are confirmed in the Senate. So talk about the importance of Congress.
Sure. Well, of course, winning the House and Senate is key because you want to be able to have both chambers and the presidency to truly pass legislation. If Democrats held the House, they would probably hold out, and you'd constantly have compromise bills or government shutdowns. So holding the House and Senate are key. The Senate is important because of judicial nominations. Imagine a scenario where it's a year from now and there's a vacancy. Maybe Justice Thomas or Justice Alito have left the court. President Trump could nominate a great, great Supreme Court justice, but if Democrats hold a majority in the Senate by even one vote, there's a chance you don't even get that person through committee. You can't get them onto the court. Or worse yet, the president has to do a deal or thinks he has to do a deal with a compromise nominee or a stealth nominee, which, by the way, never works for us, a nominee who people say, oh, this person could be great, but they don't have a record that the left can attack. And so that person gets put forward, and we end up with someone on the court that is weak and a moderate or a liberal. We've had that happen. Souter, for example. It's famous. George H.W. Bush nominated Souter to the bench because he was told by apparently John Sununu that Souter was a home run. And so many times this has happened. We get a word from somebody. This person's a home run. This person dressed up like a founding father at a Federalist Society dinner. They must be great.
That's qualification.
And this person gets put on the court. The problem with that is it's not like a House race where if they end up being a liberal, you can primary them in 2 years.
Yeah.
You put somebody on the court, we're going to have to live with them for a generation.
Yeah.
So because of that, the Senate races are huge, not only because of what the Senate does with legislation, but what they do with confirmations. In particular, judicial confirmations.
Yeah.
Well, and Phil, also heads of agencies, because that's what happened the last time Trump was elected. He could not get good people heading the agencies. That's where he had to do temporary appointments. Yeah. And so McConnell was responsible for that. They took months. And some people finally dropped out and wouldn't even be chosen. So he had to use compromise candidates or just appoint people that filled in temporarily. And it was ridiculous.
And we need to see reformation. And in order for that to happen governmentally, you have to have the White House, the House, and the Senate. It doesn't do to have two or three. You have to have all three to truly get things done in a reformative measure. You can block things without having all three, but to accomplish things, you need to have all three.
Well, think of the impeachments in the House. There were two of Trump. And that's exactly what they're going to do again if they take the House.
But Sandy, I do want to, the positive part of this is if we did have the White House, the House and the Senate, for the past 50 years, we didn't have the court. That was always the place that the left would go to block or to legislate from the bench. But the court is no longer in the hands of the left. We could see massive reformation in this nation in 4 years with the White House, the House, the Senate, and a Supreme Court that's not being obstructionist. So that's encouraging.
And we know that the left has lost control at least of the Supreme Court and some of the district courts and circuit courts because they're going after the Supreme
Court.
We talked about this on the radio and other places. They're talking about ethics reform and term limits. It's like, wow, this is refreshing. Term limits. Democrats are talking about term limits.
For judges.
Yeah, for judges.
I
think Congress should go first at the term limits thing, and then we'll see how it goes, and maybe the Supreme Court can look at it.
It's like a spurned lover. They used to love the court when it would do their bidding. Now they've lost it, and they hate it. They want to burn the place down.
Oh, yeah, and the court, to your point, was their go-to place, right? For Roe v. Wade, for Obergefell. I mean, we can probably write
pornography,
off.
Go down the list,
12
loss
decisions.
Of religious freedom, et cetera, et cetera.
Exactly. Debbie, on this going down the ballot, if you will, we got president, House, Senate, but these local elections, I tell people if I had to pick and choose between like a 50% of my time here, 50% here, and I had to kind of lean one way or the other at 51%, I would spend 51% of my time doing state and local politics because of the impact you can have. Because you call your city councilman, they're going to listen because they may only get one or two calls a week from voters, if you will, or people that live in their district. But you call the White House switchboard, right? You're one in a million. So talk about the importance of local elections.
Well, as you said, they'll answer your phone call. They represent a smaller group of people, so each voice is even more important. You might bump into them in the grocery store. They might go to your church. The laws and the rules that they impact, their sphere is similar to the president, but it's a smaller sphere, so it's going to impact you more directly. So city council affects, just your property taxes and what's going on in your area. Mm-hmm. The school board is huge. I would spend my time making sure we have school board people who believe in parental rights and that the parents, children belong to the parents, not to the government, and mm-hmm. set good curriculum and don't have pornography in the schools. And then, you go up from there. It all impacts you directly and make your voice heard and let people know about, talk to them about what's important to you.
Yeah. Yeah. The impact that people can have at the local and state level, I think is underestimated by a lot of voters.
The left knew that. They took over most of the local, they take over the water districts, they take over the county commissioners' courts. They've been actively involved at the local level for decades, and we stepped out. So
plus,
now
they
we
make
go.
Them nonpartisan races,
right.
Which
yeah.
as a voter,
it's
when it's nonpartisan,
yeah.
how do you
point.
Know who to vote for? So that's yeah. why iVoter Guides kind of stepped into some of those races, because just it's finding the needle in the haystack, but that's where voters need these.
I tell people just adopt one of those. Just start showing up at the school. Just watch. Sit in the back of the room and watch, mm-hmm. or water district or whatever. Just start going to one of these government meetings and adopt that particular entity that you're going to learn about it. You're going to post about it,
that's
let people
good.
Know, and eventually start
yeah.
testifying. But get involved at the local level. Absolutely essential.
Well, the other thing that's important to this discussion is the left has gotten involved in secretaries of state.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. It's been a nightmare. And Michigan, another George Soros spent a lot of money when we weren't looking.
That's right.
Appointing prosecutors
DAs
and prosecutors,
secretaries
of state, because he thought was thinking ahead, unlike us. Now we're playing catch up.
And one thing that the federal government is doing too, for people to be aware of, increasingly bypassing states to channel money directly to school districts.
Yes.
And so school boards are more important now than ever. I think if Harris is elected, they're going to continue to do that. They're going to amplify it, go around red states, go around red state legislatures, funnel that money to your school. So yeah, it's vital that parents get involved, in particular in school boards.
I was actually glad to hear President Trump talk about abolishing the Department of Education. Republicans have said this for 40 years.
Yeah.
Nobody's done it. Since Carter created it in the late 70s, we went from number one in education to 70th or 80th. It's
yes.
never been a good thing. It's unconstitutional.
Yes.
And, it's just to get the feds out of education and get it back to the state and local level would be a huge victory for the country.
Well, and to that point, the actions that are going to have to take place to truly reform Washington, D.C., these are drastic measures. These aren't yep. like, hey, arguing over earmarks and a spending bill.
It's changing the structures.
Yeah,
it's literally resetting the table.
Yeah, absolutely,
yeah.
because there's so much that needs to be fixed.
Yeah.
It's kind of overwhelming, but it's our duty, it's our task.
That's right.
The more we talk, Rick, I have to just pitch this to you again. Sitting at home, iVoter Guide has covered the numbers of people that sit at home that don't vote. And the more you go down the demographic group and breaking down, hey, evangelicals and Democrats and Republicans, the number of people disengaged from the civic process is embarrassing, really, to
yeah.
live in a free country that we do. Talk again to the people who are like, well, I'm kind of busy on November 5th, or, I was going to go to the beach, or do this or that. Vote.
I used to ask people, what's your freedom worth? The question has changed to, what's your child's freedom's worth? Mm-hmm. What's your grandchild's freedom worth? I mean, mm-hmm. if you can't get off the couch and go vote to protect the freedom of your grandchild, I'm going to try to say it nice like I was saying, but I like Sam Adams better. Sam Adams said, crouch down and lick the hand that feeds you, and may we never remember that you were our countrymen.
Mm.
I'm sorry, but we're at a point where yeah. we could lose this country.
Mm.
And to not engage for 30 minutes or an hour or 2 hours, if you have to go stand in line for 5 hours, think of the people that died
minimum.
So that you
at
would
minimum,
have the right to do that.
Right.
At a
yeah.
minute, yeah.
yeah.
It's absolutely essential that we do that. And I think part of it is getting over the fact that we buy the lie of my vote's not going to count. It's not
yeah.
going to make a difference. Okay, I just gave you an example, 20 votes, and then recount one by 36. Okay, every election, every vote does count. And then we also buy the lie of the system's too big. It's already too far gone and all this kind of stuff. And that's absurd. I mean, we should have the Joshua and Caleb attitude of, yes, there's giants in the land. Yes, there are a lot of big problems like you're talking about in D.C., but God has given us the land, and he's given us the ability peaceably to turn this thing around. If we don't use the weapons of warfare that we've been given, our voice and our vote, then we will end up in a civil war, an actual kinetic war. We have to have civil discourse to prevent civil war. And right now, we have the chance to do that. And those 40 million Christians that haven't been voting, now is the time to change that. And we've all seen it right now. There is a wake-up happening. There are more and more Christians that are waking up and turning out to vote. Those folks that are at home watching right now, find 5, 10, 15 people in your family, in your church, in your community, and drag them to the polls. Harass them until you know that they've gone to vote. Be a force multiplier.
Yeah.
That's good.
Sandy, we're in the last few weeks of the campaign, and it's been a long one, right? President Trump announced historically early, over 2 years ago, and, I mean, this is it, right? This is the moment of reckoning. What advice would you give to the campaign, to anyone involved, to what do they say, what do they do to incentivize voters this late in the game, 2 or 3 weeks before the election?
Well, they have to paint a really, really vivid picture of what Kamala wants and what Mike Wallace wants. And that applies not just to Christian voters, which is who we're talking to, but just common sense Americans. And there are still enough of us that it makes a huge difference. And that's why so many black voters and different groups, union members, it's just amazing the people that are coming over to Trump, former Democrats like RFK, as we talked earlier.
Yeah.
Because it's a very scary picture. And I would just say, especially to Christian voters, we usually think of it in terms of moral issues. Okay, so I want to be real specific as opposed to that broad sweep. Abortion, I think we still care about life. Well, we're talking about a party that wants abortion for all 9 months. We're talking about they love RU486, which is a brutal a process that you do at home. The first pill kills the baby. The second pill expels the baby. Mm-hmm. And you tell me that that's not traumatic for young women or any woman in the bathroom by herself and trying to take care of that baby, the born. Transgenderism. I mean, Mike Waltz, as the governor of Minnesota, made Minnesota a sanctuary. Tim.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sorry.
That's why
Mike.
We're here together.
Sorry, Mike.
Why, yeah.
He's out of Florida doing great things. Anyway, Tim Waltz made Minnesota a sanctuary state. Mm. And he's so keen on transgenderism. In fact, Kamala Harris said that she wants the government to pay for transgender surgeries for illegal immigrants. This is what we're talking about.
He even wants to redefine pedophilia and make it more acceptable. Yeah,
yeah, makes you wonder,
doesn't
it? Yeah. So then also he's putting condoms in restrooms in the schools in Minnesota for nine boys as young as nine. Wow. I want you, and so how does that affect you? Because you have children. Mm. We're talking about parental authority, parental knowledge, all of that. They want to take all of that away from you.
Yeah.
If you care about your kids, as you said, Rick, if you don't care about yourself, I think most people are pretty happy and fat. And that's the problem.
Yep.
And so they're not thinking about future. Our parents, my parents, they planned for the future. They planned for our future. They saved. They thought about us. This is such a, my generation is such a selfish generation. They're not thinking about their children and grandchildren. I think of national security. The Bible says that if we don't take care of our family, we're worse than infidels. Well, I'll just tell you one thing. In San Diego, Bruce and I were there just a few weeks ago, there are Chinese men ramming the shore in boats, scrambling out of the boats, and climbing up this hill. This is in a neighborhood.
Wow.
And black vans are coming and picking them up and taking them. We have tens of thousands of military-aged Chinese men. That doesn't count for coming into the country.
Yeah.
Where are they? What are they going to do? We also have Islamists. Hamas has warned they're going to do the same thing here that they did in Israel. You want that to stand? Are you telling me that when that happens and you see horrendous things happening, maybe even to your family, to your children, you're going to be okay with not voting?
Yeah.
Really? Then there's, of course, just I think people give this excuse. They say, one of the reasons I hear is because, things are so bad, but, God is sovereign. And I just want to say something practical. When Judas hung himself, there was a place among the disciples. And so what did they do? Did they wait for God's sovereignty to bring along someone? Or no, they prayed about it and they voted. on who would be the next disciple. Now, that's very elementary, but I don't know why they bothered if they thought God was sovereign. You think they didn't know that? Maybe they needed to go to some church that's big on Calvinism and sovereignty. I don't know. Then they say they don't want to vote because of Trump and his history with women, the things he said, the names he's called. And I just want to remind everyone, he was not a believer in Christ. We're not sure he is now. He doesn't claim to be. He doesn't go around saying that. I don't understand why Christians are so pious that they will not accept that and look at the good things that he's done. Titus says, remember that you too were once afar off. God uses sinners. We should know, right? And so that's just not a good enough reason when you consider what he's going to do and what the alternatives are. And last but not least, I think of Ezekiel, where he tells us that there, the watchman on the wall, he's watching. That's what we do. That's what I do on radio for years. I've tried to warn people, this is what's coming. That's my job. It's my responsibility. But it's your responsibility to do something when you hear me warn you. And all of us warn you, you must change your ways, change your patterns, change your way of thinking, and go out and vote, or we're going to lose our country. Yeah. And if you feel comfortable going when you know you are judged, and we all will be, explain to God that you didn't because you thought he had it all in hand. So you didn't do your part. You had ordered Chinese and, you know, watched television. I'm sorry, but that's really what it boils down to.
Can I add to that, Walker, too? Because I've heard people say, too, you know, Jesus is coming back, and before he does, it's going to get really bad. So we're just going to let this go.
That's right.
But we don't know. Is he coming? You know, the Bible says you don't know when. It might be 20 years. We might have 50 years. I hope we do, for the sake of our children and grandchildren. But don't let this thing go to pot because you don't show up and vote because you just want to let it go to pot. Let's fight. Let's be good stewards. And if we lose, we lose. But let's at least be good stewards before the Lord.
And do we know, I mean, how many times have Christians in the past said this is it?
Every generation.
We're in the final chapter of Revelation here.
World War II, the French, just let Hitler come in because it's over.
Yeah, and they were wrong. Those who thought that were wrong, completely wrong.
No man knows the day.
No,
exactly.
Right? And it could be 1,000 years.
France paid a huge price.
And I don't want to be sitting around in 30 years from now, and my kids and grandkids are going, hey, Dad, pops, how did we turn into Venezuela? Like, they talk about how great America was. What happened? Where were you?
Remember Ronald Reagan's great speech where he said we could be telling our children's children what it was once like to live in America where men were free.
Yeah.
Again, you were more nice than I. Well, you used the word pious. I would say self-righteous.
Yeah,
To say I'm not going to vote for that guy because he's not pure enough for me. I mean, look, just because you wherever you want to stake out where Donald Trump is, they are so far to the left of that, way over here. I'm trying to do that for the camera because that's to the left over there. Anyway, it's my right. Anyway, my point is this is the greatest gap in worldview difference that we've ever seen in our lifetime.
And Rick, we've talked about our children, and we should, but also we need to be good to our neighbors. So even if I can afford to send my children to private school and protect them, what about the family that doesn't have the resources to do it, that are right now being destroyed in the public schools? So we need to do it also for them.
Even assuming that private schools would continue.
And
homeschooling would continue. That's a big assumption if they take over, because they don't want parents to have that right. They don't want you to be separate.
Right.
Everyone will have to bow the knee. And that means everyone listening to me. It won't matter that you didn't criticize Trump or you came out and said you hated him and, you know, you wouldn't vote for him. You will not be spared because of your neutrality.
Yeah.
Well,
God's anointed are often what we would consider despicable. I mean, he used Nebuchadnezzar. He used Cyrus. King David was a murderer and an adulterer. Moses, go down the list. I mean, this idea
right,
that Trump's
harlot.
Trump's not holy
problems,
enough.
Right?
Yes. If any of us were on the ballot, we're the lesser of two evils. I mean, it's such an absurd argument to say that I've got to have the perfect candidate. It's a cop-out, in my opinion. And you've got to do the best you can with what you got, where you are. We've said for years, unless Jesus is on the ballot, you're always going to vote for the lesser of two evils. And so you say, who are the two candidates that can win? David Barton started saying this recently, and I think it's the right way to look at this. You only have two options, to vote or not vote. It's not just, you don't say we only have two options, Trump or Harris. You have to first say your two options are to be a good steward or not be a good steward. And I don't think there's any way to biblically win the argument, don't be a good steward. So now if you are going to vote, Now it's where do you go with that lot? Which disciple are you going to vote for to join, right? Which person are you going to vote for? And the worldview differences are so broad. This should be a no-brainer. Unfortunately, it's not, which is why we're talking about it right now.
Yeah.
But to not participate is not an option.
Absolutely. Two remaining things, and then we're going to wrap up. Jameson, you mentioned this in the first segment. What states do you think this is going to come down to on November 5th?
Yeah, we're kind of just talking about it. I think for voters in the swing states, their choice, the race is not between Trump and Harris. It's between freedom and no freedom. Okay, so the question is, are voters in the swing states, are they going to realize that that is their binary choice? It's freedom or no freedom? Are you going to vote for a future where the government has all the control? Are you going to vote for limited government where you have prosperity, you have initiative, self-responsibility, and self-determination? Or are you going to vote for a situation where the government's controlling the electrical grid, the government has total control over the culture, over the schools,
over your bank accounts, everything.
Your bank account. I mean, we're seeing a lot of scary stuff come out of Washington, the rulemaking, the deep state, all that. That is going to be multiplied by 10 times because we're not looking at 4 years of Harris. Mm-hmm. We're looking at potentially 8 years.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is going to be a disaster if she is elected president. So the question is, are voters in key states going to realize what is at stake here? I think there are three states to watch in particular. First is Pennsylvania. If Trump wins Pennsylvania, I predict he's going to win the election. The second is North Carolina. If Biden wins North Carolina,
Harris,
yeah.
Come
on. Stall candidate.
It was Biden 4 weeks ago.
Right, right.
It sounds so fast.
Who knows who it'll be the week before the election?
The machine. Just say the machine. The Democrat machine.
They could always change here, you know, put him back. Who knows? But if Harris wins North Carolina, then I think that she is going to win the election. So to me, the state that's in between is Arizona. Who is going to win Arizona? Arizona has passed some reforms that we think that they're going to have fair elections. I hope that that's the case. And if that's the case, then Trump will win Arizona. And that's going to be a really good sign.
Hmm. Debbie, the last thing that is the elephant in the room, no pun intended, is the iVoter Guide. We've talked about it a few times during this segment. But this is I call it the one-stop shop for all things election. And that's not an overstatement. So tell our audience about the iVoter Guide.
Well, one more time. It's a website. It's called iVoterGuide.com. It's a personalized, data-driven voter guide. It's not like your mom and dad's voter guide that just looks at 5 or 6 issues. It's really in-depth. And we have covered federal candidates nationwide. We cover statewide candidates, so the governor, the secretary of state, the state Supreme Court, the state school board even in 36 states. 32 states, we're covering the state Senate and the state legislature. There are school board races we're covering in 11 states, about 600 school board candidates. Wow. We have now started covering ballot measures, so we're covering 45 ballot measures. We haven't even talked about that, but the left has made great strides in legalizing abortion up to birth through ballot measures that they say are citizen-initiated, but it's not. It's leftist money buying signatures to get it on the ballot, to deceive voters. So voters need the truth. So that's why a voter guide is now covering 44 ballot measures in 24 states, all the ones about life, all the ones about the election, ones about the family, ones about marijuana.
Yep.
So voters can go to iVoterGuide and really see the truth of who's given money to each side, who's endorsing each side, and what does a yes mean? What does a no mean? Mm-hmm. You know, because they say you're taking away the rights. What really is accomplishing through these? So it's a great tool. It's personalized. You go to iVoterGuide.com. You enter your address and get your personalized ballot. You can see the little gas gauge that might go below the gauge, possibly. But you can also see the data for yourself. So it is a one-stop shop. We've got all the links to their website and their social media, all their campaign finance data, their scorecards, their endorsements, their questionnaires. I would encourage everybody to sign up for our email list and forward it to your friends. Use it just like as you take people to the polls. If you find iVoterGuide helps you, share it with your friends and your family.
Mm-hmm.
In judicial races, too, right? Statewide judicial
State
races.
State Supreme Court races, yep. Court of Criminal Appeals. So we work great with Philip and his team in evaluating judges that are on the ballot because, you know, who knows who to vote for in judges? So they're actually reading the rulings. And are they legislating or are they following the Constitution?
Well, it's hard work to know what to do, but your website makes it easy for them,
that's
really.
That's the goal.
Makes
that's
it goal. Easy to be a good steward. And can they register to vote there?
They can find the link to register by the might be too late to do that by this point. So, but in some states, you can register on election day.
Good.
So if you go on the homepage and scroll down to the map and click on your state, you will see a link to register to vote, link to find your polling place, link to request an absentee ballot. We really have tried to gather everything into one place.
Hmm. Walker, one more thing I think is important. It's not just voting on election day. There are so many ways you can help candidates, and I think we have a responsibility. I think Christians, by and large, are not used to giving their money to politics. They maybe will vote, but they're not thinking about how they need to help. And I'll give an illustration. We have the conservatives could take back the Senate, but what's happened is Mitch McConnell controls the money for re-election, and he does not want to help anyone who's a true conservative who will vote against him being leader. Mm-hmm. It's bizarre. This is the inner workings, the corruption we have. And so there are such great Senate candidates that need help. And if you're in a state, you don't have to be from their state. You can give money or you can even fly there, drive there, and work for the campaign. If you have a candidate, I was thinking of Carrie Lake in Arizona. I mean, I like Carrie. I'm not, but she was doing great in the polls, and now millions are being poured in to run campaigns, and she's been deprived of money from the Senate campaign coffers. Mm-hmm. And so she's just one. There's like six or seven of them. So I would encourage you guys. And the same thing, House, the Freedom Caucus are the champions. They have a House Freedom Fund. They need your money. They need you to make phone calls. They are undersourced, under-resourced. Mm-hmm. And so consider doing that. If you don't have the money, use your time to make phone calls, whatever the campaign needs you to do.
Write cards into that state.
Exactly.
Great point, candidate.
You know about that. Right?
They may not have a U.S. Senate race in their state, or it may be uncontested or an easy win. There are places that really matter because the balance of the Senate matters for all of us, right?
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Totally. That's the point. Thanks for making that point.
Could I, last thing, because you said about sharing iVoter Guide with other people or sharing even what your recommendations are, and you talked about money, lives, fortune, sacred honor. That's what we're talking about here, our time to do these things, mm-hmm. our money to give to candidates and causes, mm-hmm. and your reputation. And so can I just encourage everybody to put your sample ballot on your social media? Mm-hmm. Most people walk into the polling place only knowing who they're going to vote for president. Mm-hmm. And they don't know any of those other races at all. And so if you share and you put it out there, they're going to at least have something they can, even if they don't go to iVoterGuide.com, they take your printout or your mm-hmm. selections of it. It's just a great way to be a force multiplier. Most people are going in president, and then it's going to be named. They might recognize a name, and they might vote for it. So if you share with all the people in your sphere, it's going to help people to cast an informed vote instead of just going in there blind.
Yeah, and they can. I didn't realize this until a couple of years ago, but you can take information into your polling place. You can print off. I always print off my personalized ballot from iVoterGuide.com. And I just carry it in there with me.
Right.
There's no rule against, it's not like you're taking a test.
Right.
There's no rule against taking a sheet in there with information on it on who you're going to vote for.
Yeah.
So that's completely legal, 100% permissible.
And we live, breathe, and eat this stuff, and I don't know who some of those people are down at the bottom.
Right?
I mean, we need those
like
things.
County commissioner, right?
Yeah, right.
So iVoterGuide.com is where that's at, and we're trying our best to get as local as we can for these elections just to help you out. iVoterGuide.com. Folks, November 5th is the day, and even as Sandy said, leading up to that, if you want to vote early, vote early. If your state permits it, make sure you're registered and vote on November 5th. There's so much at stake. We've covered really just a sample of it here on this episode of AFA at Home, but thanks so much for joining us.